The following recording comes from the Barcamp meeting organised by the PPP SIG at the ALT conference in September at the University of Leeds. It begins with Gail Calverley introducing her work for JISC around time-based media application profiles. And then a discussion ensues, generally pursuing the theme of institutional systems and management for supporting the use of podcasting in its various forms across the university. I've tried to work out who is actually talking, and my best guess is the following people are involved. Gail Calverley starts off. Paul Baksheesh, who is the critical friend of the Higher Education Academy for the SIG, joins in. Sean Edwardson from the University of Bangor makes a contribution, and Robin Johnson from the Manchester Metropolitan University Business School joins in. Carol Comer from the University of Chester, and myself, Andrew Middleton, and then Graham McElerney contributes as well later on. Okay, so this is quite a wide-ranging discussion about infrastructure and systems for managing podcasts and podcast material. Apologies for the quality of the recording as well. The Barcamp was actually quite a successful early evening event, and quite a lot was going on. So this discussion was taking place at the same time as a demonstration of Audacity, and we'll hear more about that demonstration in the following podcast episode.
Gail Calverley, University of Manchester.
Work I'm doing is the time-based media application profile for JISC.
And it's one of a group of projects, because you have the SWOT profile, which has already been developed, that scholarly works. You've got image, you've got time-based media, and there's geospatial, and there's two scoping studies. One's actually in scientific data and one's in learning materials. But that project is looking at the way that you would search across materials in order to actually discover third-party materials or of a variety of your own materials. And effectively, the profile could be implemented in lots of tools or repository systems or all kinds of technologies. Essentially, it's a reference for that kind of data for that particular purpose, because if you're doing archiving or if you're doing preservation, you would have different requirements of a profile than for the searching. What's quite interesting is you're talking about the tagging. So that comes into one of the requirements, is how you would handle whole pieces of material, how you would handle segments of material. If you're looking at video, if you're extracting stills, which are images, and you may extract a group of stills, how we would actually make those searchable. So if you have a repository where you've got a range of material and you use it slightly differently for different courses and you want to find the different versions, how would we have to accommodate that so that a profile your systems people put in place when they constructed that repository would actually operate? Okay. So that if you search, you get the stuff that you expect rather than what they think you're looking for, which is quite a challenge. So there's a whole host of things across a range of projects, including this work and the SIG, that are actually quite relevant to how we draw up the requirements and the specification from which we would then build that profile.
Can I just, there's a kind of meta question which I'm dying to ask, actually, reflecting on Richard's was it Simon, yeah. Is there a case that people would support here for a new JISC shared service? Let's call it the podcasting support service. I mean, if you just, it's best to raise that now, it's quite a topical kind of issue. Obviously, from what Gail's saying, the architecture is essentially being sorted for that. Of course, one could do a distributed, but that is now 153 institutions to sort. And one of the things that Janet has done quite well in the past is to sort of intercept some things at an early stage. One thinks of the Janet streaming and all the stuff is done there. Or is it? Would it be impertinent and only relevant in a few institutions? Because it looks like a lot of you have kind of got on with this, but it could be quite crucial to the success of podcasting to have some degree, debatable how much, of central standardisation, coordination, maybe even repository storage, archiving for the length of time a student complains. tiresome stuff, which nevertheless has to be done.
Well, from the position of the project, there are discussions about cross-profile issues, and those do have to do partly with technical support, partly with long-term maintenance of the profiles. And there is a question around time-based media, particularly in terms of technical support for institutions. There is, for example, licensing and broadcast material support through the British University Film and Video Council, but that's different. They run workshops for technical support, but actually technical support in services view is a slightly different area, and I think actually that's being reviewed, but I can't obviously say that on their behalf. That's just we have conversations within the project to do with maintenance, and those kinds of questions will come up again, so it's probably quite a good time to be asking that kind of thing.
From our point of view, I'd say no. One of the things one of the hurdles that we've come to solve is visibility to, if you don't put it on the VLE, you want to be able to give students individual access to podcasts, if it's something like formative feedback or even summative feedback or whatever, and therefore you want probably something inside the institution so that you can access
but we've heard that in some institutions the VLE people veto it and just off, just crudely, aren't you? But some other places they facilitate it or they're acquiescent. So I guess it a lot depends on how many central service refuseniks we have around.
Well, our service refuses, it doesn't allow us to put it on the VLE, but we've now therefore got a different server, but we do want that control inside so that both staff can control access to the material that they're putting up, but also students can have controlled access for students and a single sign-on rather than having them multiple servers, multiple passwords.
But having been a central service person in the past, people in central services worry about archiving and standards and things which they tend to feel departments won't worry about so much. So unless you take on the full panoply of regulation, this could be quite a cost long term.
We just launched our own television channel, like 24/7, and we want the students to be engaged in producing content. If they see a live band at the venue and they take a mobile phone video of it, they want to distribute it. We want it for the community and staff as well. And a few of us are getting together now saying, what rules do we put down, if any? And how do we do it? And we're talking about a very large structure and cost. We talk about 50 terabytes of direct access, 30 terabytes, 500 terabytes of backup storage. And because we're doing this and we think, wow, but it's the whole thing. It permutates podcasting. Rich media is permutating across everything now and involving everything. And I just came from a big discussion, I don't know, were you anybody else in the hall, the pros and cons of using Web 2 technology, and it's going to happen. It can't be stopped, but how can we use it in education, and how much must we control and provide? At the moment we're doing this podcasting metronome, and we're using YouTube. We got, because that's the only way we can get it to work within the institution. But no control there at all. But it seems to have worked educationally. So it's a big issue for institutions, I think, and for the sector.
Whether you're talking about ability to provide training support or workshops for people to actually be able to generate more material, and then there's all the kinds of issues that are raising, and I've got a feeling that you would have different types of services and different responsibility levels depending on what aspects of those four areas you're actually considering, and there might be a different view depending on which of those you were discussing.
I'm Sharon Edwardson from Bandy University. What we've done recently in the past few months is we decided we wanted to get a measure of interest in podcasting in Bangor, so we just decided to have a podcasting event where we showed what was happening in Bangor and what other institutes were doing. We got a really good response. We had 40 people attend, which was massive for Bangor in the middle of the summer, and
massive
which was very well attended for Bangor in the middle of summer. And we just got general feedback from people about what it was that they wanted to do. And one of the things that came up with this kind of idea of managing resources, that the one thing that came up that they were fearful of was the copyright ownership of their performance afterwards. And that came up after a negative response from someone who was presenting, who found that their material, once it was recorded, wasn't going to be used in their, in a way that they wanted it to be used. So this now, I mean, this has been fed back to our teaching and learning group, and so people are dealing with that now. But it was to have things that were hosted on external resources seemed to be more popular, because people, if they were putting them on Web 2 technologies, they felt that they had more control over the content, and that they, if they left or they didn't want their content to be used in that particular way, they could take it away with them. So, and because we were trying to find out, you know, do you want a centrally supported thing within Blackboard, where we perhaps use some building blocks that we have to buy in, or extra technology? And people did want to do that for the ease of use, but then there was also, when you present it that way, that once it's within Blackboard, it's kind of locked within Blackboard, and the rollover of courses that we do means that your material gets rolled over to the next year. We don't know what that implication would be then on our server space. That would be, you know, we're duplicating course material, we're putting podcasts in there, we're going to blow up the server quite quickly. So
just a question on that though, is it not just audio material, is that not the same as other documents as far as rollover and ownership?
That's just really, so
someone, yeah, but I think
your lecturers upload
images
together, presentations.
I think they were more, they felt that their audio material was more personal somehow than their notes. It was their performance. They wanted some clarity on what the copyright ownership was on their performance.
In
a lecture.
It's an interesting concept, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, at our university, it's the university owns everything.
Yeah.
Whatever you do.
And that's the same now, isn't
it? Yeah.
Well, that is the standard, as we stand in Apple contract, under, as it was, we used to call, but it didn't apply to many of the old universities. Mm-hmm. And that's, but there is actually a Web 2 Rights project.
But the fact that the Web...
presumably in the volume of material has an answer, does it, to this question of audio rights? Or not.
There's nothing peculiar about audio, quote.
Right.
But I don't, in terms of copyright, I really don't think it is necessarily separate. It's funny, as soon as you start talking about media, the word copyright always tends to follow fairly quickly, because people latch onto the music thing, don't they? But copyright is copyright, isn't it? It's the idea of performing as well, performing.
I think it's the performance. There are various performance. There, it's also perception of academics. I mean, I think this point about audio being more personal, because a number of institutions, basically, the rules are completely clear, but woe betide the vice chancellor who starts enforcing these rules.
Mm.
And I think audio might be slightly closer to the boundary. There are some weirdos. I mean, I'm given to understand from people I work with on an early project and IPR that when it comes to photographs, it becomes very weird.
Actually, music can be one of the more complicated ones, and films can be even more. I've actually done a bit of work on this in Sheffield now, trying to answer this question with our sort of academic secretary. So you're absolutely right. The opening shot for most people is if it's materials created as part of your day job, it belongs to your employer. However, any musical performance, the performer also has performance rights, and this is where it does start to get a bit messy.
Whistle the feedback.
Yeah,
exactly. And then,
put a few lyrics,
and then there is an additional complication. If, for example, I wish to play a copyrighted tune in a podcast to then distribute to students, we are starting to get into some quite messy levels. But in answer to the first question, I mean, certainly the policy at Sheffield is we would take what you might, you know, basically, you know, Parliament's called a gentleman's agreement. So say, for example, Paul's done 10 podcasts and decides to leave us and work somewhere else. He wants to take his podcast. We want to carry on using him. We would like to think we would come to some sort of agreement with that, and that, you know, that would be mutually acceptable. But the basic contractual has said, he said, most people are in that boat. You know, it belongs to your employer.
We've got joint, so paper-based, whatever-based. Can take the work with us, but the institution can use the work that you've done up to date if you've done it, you know, for them.
But would your thought to us, Andrew, be that these, interesting though these challenges are, they are in a sense noises off, and this group, us lot, should solve them without asking Auntie
that
for Uncle Janet.
That is exactly what my irresponsible position is. I think in terms of how we've dealt with the external examiner, we have recorded it, we have put it in the box on a CD. And, you know, it's up to us as people that know best about what we're trying to do, and as responsible people in education, to set or establish some good practice. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that the SIG can actually do, lead on the issues that we're fully aware of.
Right, well, thank you all. I think dinner calls now.